the March 21st Capital Investment Committee will come to order. First item on the agenda is Representative Hewitt with the Minnesota Zoo, House File 2328. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing Bill House File 2328. I am the legislator that actually represents the zoo at this current time, and I'm excited. It's a great time for the zoo. As most of you know, the zoo has been around since 1978, and it kind of needs a little rebuild right now. It's getting a little tired, and I have with me the zoo director here this morning. I'm going to cut through my 20-minute introduction here and get right to the facts. So I'm going to let John Frawley take over and tell you all about the exciting things that we have planned for the zoo.
All right, Mr. Frawley, welcome.
Chair Murphy, committee members, thank you for having us. John Frawley, director of the Minnesota Zoo. I'm not sure if this is on. Is this on? Okay, thank you. Thank you for your time this morning. Thank you for your service. Also, thank you to Representative Hewitt for helping us with this bill. He's right. We are a 40-year-old zoo. A lot of people call us the new zoo, but we are 40 years old, and so it does need some work. So today I'd like to outline our bonding request. I met with a lot of you. I've listened. The zoo's listened, and as you've heard from me in the past, you know, no blockbuster exhibits, nothing new we're asking for really at the zoo. It's just time that we fix the zoo and fix some of the things that aren't working at the zoo. So our biggest request, just to go through them, I have a slide. Oops. To just go quickly over our requests, you might have remember the old monorail system at the Minnesota Zoo. It was a 1.3 monorail track ride. That exhibit has been dormant and went obsolete since 2013. So we've not been able to power those cars up. To repower those cars was in excess of $50 million project. So instead, the track's just been sitting empty with no use. We have an exciting new project called the Minnesota Treetop Trail. It's the longest treetop trail loop in the world is what we're proposing, where people can walk through the trees in Minnesota. It's for all ages. It's for all abilities, ADA accessible. The exciting thing about this project, this treetop trail, it's a $22 million project. We're planning on raising half of the money privately and asking the state to match that that private fundraising effort. Good news today that I can give you. We've already started fundraising. Our first gift just came in at $6 million privately for this treetop trail. So we're off to a really good start raising the private side. So we're hoping the state can match to make this available for Minnesotans. Second, we have a $4 million request in for the previous nocturnal trail, which has been boarded up at the Minnesota Zoo for over 10 years, plywood. That's not, you know, a good show for the state zoo, and we'd like to get that exhibit back open. The third we move into is transportation. We are a large zoo, and we need to move people throughout the zoo, and so we're looking for support to fix road systems and infrastructure so we can move people and shuttle people through the zoo. In our budget request, we do have some transportation vehicles, and this complements that budget request in some bonding work for road systems to transport people throughout our zoo. Number four, the fourth, we have a vet hospital. As you know, animal care and animal health is critical. The vet hospital was built before the zoo even opened, and so that's on the list. And then lastly, $4 million for asset preservation. So just to end, I thought I'd just show you the original monorail, if you remember what it looked like. All we're left now with is a monorail track, 1.3 miles. But the new vision for this Minnesota Treetop Trail, which is an exciting project from Minnesota, we have a one-minute video I'd like to share with you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a quick comment, Mr. Frawley, just want to say thank you for inviting the legislature to the Zula this past weekend, and also for your work in partnering up with private entities to get access for students who are medically
disabled. That's where I want to be. I want to see everything the world has to offer. I want to.
The sound didn't come back on. I plugged it in.
Representative Hewitt, your time is up.
Okay.
Oh.
Just tell us what your main ask is today.
Madam Chair, we are asking for $25 million in appropriations and bond proceeds. $21 million, which will be used to renovate the zoo, as you heard, reuse the monorail track and do some much-needed updates to make the zoo much more accessible to all. And the last part of that, the $4 million, is asset preservation. We ask that you put this in your omnibus, and I'm sorry, we ask that you consider this in your bill for further review.
We certainly will consider it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, John.
Good try.
Next item on the agenda is House File 613, Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, this is House File 613. This is a Rosemount Armory project. These guys are great neighbors. They're right next to our high school. Actually, they're right in my neighborhood. And I'm going to turn it right over to our speaker here to tell you more about it.
Welcome, Mr. Kerr. Talk fast.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. This project was actually briefed as a component of the governor's bonding bill, so I won't spend a lot of time. It is a $10.507 million renovation. It's very important to us from a timing perspective right now to get this done so that we can renovate the building when we move the 34th Division out before we move the next unit in. And with that, I'll subject myself to any questions, Madam Chair, and we'll yield time back.
Mr. Kerr, explain what there's extra funds.
Madam Chair, the language that we proposed in the governor's bill would allow any funds that remain on the completion of the project to be rolled over to the Agency for Asset Preservation statewide.
Okay. For the armories that are around the state?
Yes, Madam Chair, the other 62 that we own.
Do you anticipate that there will be leftover?
No, Madam Chair. We usually come really close to the end on these things, so our estimates are usually very close, particularly in the metro area. We've got pretty good data because we do enough of these projects to know how much they're going to cost.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hewitt?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this consideration in your bill, and we look forward to hearing from you in the future. Thank you.
Very good. House File 2118 and House File 2484, Representative Cagle.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. House File 2118 is a bond appropriation to the Amateur Sports Commission for the redesign and construction of a new maintenance facility on the property. And so with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnson, welcome back. Make your case.
Make my case. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Johnson. I'm an executive director of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. We have a piece of property that was purchased in 1998, 80-acre parcel, and when we bought that parcel of land, it was an old sod farm, there was a maintenance building, so it's a 50-plus-year-old building that is on our facility that is in dire need of repair. Actually, we were told at the time, I wasn't there, but my predecessor was told not to occupy it because of lack of fire suppression and various code violations with that building, but the money was not available to build a new one at the time, nor has it been since that time, so we occupied it as a state over the objections of the city, and we've continued there since 1998. That's the maintenance facility for our entire 750-acre campus. It's where we store all of our facilities and all of our equipment, and we repair all of our equipment on campus. As you can imagine, it's a lot of lawnmowers and a lot that's the type of equipment.
Okay. Will you provide the committee with a breakdown on what the $2.5 million would be for the demolition and what the costs of the building would be in the various sections that the bill calls for?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Let me grab my glasses.
Sure. But in the meantime,
is there a page? No, could you pass these
2484?
Yes, Madam Chair. So 2484 is for asset preservation for the National Sports Center in Blaine. As you all know, the National Sports Center in Blaine is a huge asset to the community, and so we want to make sure that the facilities are preserved.
There's a break on it.
And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Johnson as well.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the rough breakdown of the $2.5 million is it's $250,000 for demolition and $2.25 for the new construction located at another site on the campus closer to the golf course. The safety issue there, as you see the map that's being passed out, the building itself is on the north side of the road that bisects our campus. And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, did you switch to the asset preservation bill?
Just go ahead.
Okay, all right, great. So that the maintenance building would be relocated to the south side of our campus, which is much closer to the 500 acres of the golf course. So they're not crossing over that road quite so much. So it's the relocation. Roughly, like I said, roughly $200,000 for demolition and the rest is for construction for the new facility.
Okay, so the golfers don't mind a maintenance building in their eyesight as much as people driving by on 105 might?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, maybe we'll get some fast-growing arborvitae or something to cover it up. Actually, it's tucked away a little bit behind one of the ice rinks back there, so it's not quite as visible. There is an eyesight issue, but really what I'm more concerned about is the safety issue. The city has gone a long way in improving this road that is a major thoroughfare through our campus. That was completed 2 years ago with two roundabouts, and that work was done. It was a county road at one time, turned into a city road. Up until that time, it was a very, very dangerous intersection or a crossover point. As you think about it, and I know some of the folks here on your committee and have had kids who played in that tournament, and as many as 25,000 people are there a day during USA Cup crossing that road. So to get the maintenance building on the other side of campus is an important piece for safety, both for the employees and for our customers.
And when the maintenance building was built, I understand there were 15 fields, and now there's 65 fields. Is that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when the maintenance building was built was before it's 50 years old. It was probably built in the early 1960s when it was still a sod farm. It was when the state of Minnesota purchased this 80-acre parcel, the building came with it. And you're right, at that time there were no soccer fields on the north side of 105th, and there were just 15 to 20 fields on the south side of 105th. Now we're up to 55 fields, the Guinness Book of World Records, largest soccer facility in the world. I'm trying to figure out a way. Last year we had 1,200 teams at this tournament, and we're trying to get it up to be the largest in the world. Right now that's in Sweden with 2,000 teams, and we're trying to figure out ways to make it that large.
Well, anything to get rid of an eyesore, you know? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Cagle.
Thank you. Thank you to the folks who are taking care.
Next item on the agenda, House File 2085, Representative Norness, Otter Tail, and this is a biggie. Listen very carefully. Let's not go over the 5 minutes, but we have a big charge here.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Working with the Department of Human Services, I hope.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. House File 2085 deals with a building in, actually, Fergus Falls, located in Otter Tail County. We're asking for $2,808,000. So the Department of Health and Human Services would actually purchase that building from the county. And there's a handout that all of you should have that kind of tells the story. I'd right now like to turn it over to our testifier who's traveled here from Otter Tail County to explain why we have to have this bill.
Ms. Schustrom, welcome to the committee, and tell it as succinctly as possible.
I will do that. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning regarding House File 2085. My name is Deb Schustrom, and I'm the Director of Human Services in Otter Tail County. Otter Tail County, as well as the City of Fergus Falls, have a long-time partnership with the state of Minnesota in providing a range of residential services. In 2007, Otter Tail County was approached by the state of Minnesota to enter into an agreement to build a facility to house the Community Addiction Recovery Enterprise, also known as CARE, program. A $6.4 million facility was built to the specifications of the state using their architect, and Otter Tail County and the state entered into a 20-year lease agreement which would cover the facility's debt service. Over the years, DHS's need for the CARE program has changed. The building was a 60-bed facility, and the need had become a 16-bed facility. 10 years into this lease agreement, the Department of Human Services provided notice to end the lease, and the county reluctantly agreed to terminate that based on a mutual understanding that DHS and the county would continue their collaborative relationship to utilize this facility for another behavioral health service. We've been working with the Department of Human Services over the past couple of years, and most intensively since June of 2018, to bring a new service to the county, and have been in communication with Commissioner Lori as well. However, at this time, there is not a service or a provider specifically identified to utilize the facility. While we appreciate the efforts of the Department of Human Services and Commissioner Lori, the county has not had a tenant or revenue in this building since June of 2018, and we don't have a way to pay that debt service of $2.8 million other than to burden the taxpayers of Otter Tail County. The state of Minnesota and Otter Tail County entered into this agreement that would keep the county financially whole, and without a tenant in the building, the spirit of the agreement is not kept. The state must honor the commitment made, and House File 2085 seeks to keep the state responsible for the agreement that was initiated in 2007, as well as addressing utilizing the facility to provide a needed service in the county and the region. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to talk with you, and if you have questions that I can try to answer, we'll do that now.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any use of that building right now? Is it being used for anything?
Representative and Madam Chair, it is not currently being used for anything at this time.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any plans for any particular use in the future?
Representative Erdahl and Madam Chair, there is not. That's the conversation that we've been having with the Department of Human Services to find a utilization for it. There was a plan in place for a provider, and that plan did not work out.
Okay, thank you.
When did you hear that the plan was not working or would not work?
Madam Chair, the notice that the provider would not be utilizing the building started in January of this year, and we received word most recently, I believe it was about 2 weeks ago, that there would not be a provider for that building.
Representative Sanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the handout, it says another facility in region would receive the PRTF contract. Do you know who that is?
Representative and Madam Chair, the contract is being It's a complicated background, but the provider that we were hoping would come is not coming to Otter Tail County. Another provider has been selected to provide that service, and is going to not that will not be developed in our region. It will actually be over towards Bemidji.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
House file 1929, Representative Torkelson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
House file 1929 is the continuing funding of the Mercy Program, first established in 1976. Very important program that helps support our short line rail roads across the state and the development of and maintenance of them. As former transportation chair, current transportation lead, I understand how important it is to keep these commodities off of our highways so as to reduce the wear and tear on our road system. I have with me a testifier who will give you some more detailed information.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Appetz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Appetz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and we represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. To start, I'm just going to reference some materials you've got in your packet. At the end of this packet, there's a map of the railroads that operate throughout the state, 16 of which are short line railroads, which this program is designed to address mainly. And I'd just like to say, first of all, this really is a jobs program. Railroads move stuff that people make because other people need it. They don't move it just for the heck of it. You got to get it from one place to another. And about 40 years ago, when there was a major change in the railroad industry, a lot of these little railroads were created. Over the 40 years the program has been in existence, there's been about a $45 million investment that's leveraged about $175 million in improvements to the short line rail system here in the state. We just, the Railroad Association just conducted we call it scope of need, to get a sense of what short line railroads in Minnesota do need, and that's included in the second part of the materials that you've got right here. The estimate that we came up with was about $71, $72 million worth of new track, ties, ballast, turnouts, crossings, a variety of different things that would help improve the railroad operations in the state, which means you can move things faster, quicker, and more efficiently. This is not a program unique to Minnesota. There are several other places, or several other states that have similar programs, Wisconsin, Iowa, South Dakota. Iowa, for instance, has invested about $60 million in its short line program. Wisconsin has invested about $250 million, $240 million, in their program. We have, through the graces of the good chairman, the opportunity to now receive some grants through this program, which is helpful. The first three of those grants were awarded last year through the Department of Transportation, one up in Becker, one in the Short Line Railroad in Hugo, and another one. The governor has recommended $5 million in his capital budget for this program. I appreciate that the former chair and my friend and drummer, Mr. Torkelson, has suggested $10 million. We appreciate it very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, Mr. Appetz, you said you used the figure $71 million?
$72, ma'am.
Or $72 million? Dollars?
Yes, ma'am.
But you're asking for $10
million? Yes, ma'am. We'll be back.
All right. Will you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll see. The railroads will. They'll be here for a long time.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Torkelson.
House file 1596, Representative Olson. One of my very favorite day trips. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for taking the time to review House File 1596. which would be an appropriation to the Lake Superior Zoo or the Duluth Zoo for $250,000. And so with the short time, I don't think I'll say too much, but I do want to say that the Lake Superior Zoo is a wonderful asset to Duluth and one of our main tourist attractions on the western half of Duluth. I personally enjoy visiting the zoo with my three-year-old daughter. As a West Duluth resident, there aren't a lot of activities where I can let her burn off steam during a fair number of our cold months in Duluth, and the zoo is one of them, and the main building is one of the main buildings where that can happen with exhibits and attractions and space for gathering. So in addition to housing several exhibits, the main building is the entry point to the zoo, but it is well past its useful life. Much like how Duluth acts as a gateway to the North Shore and the wilderness areas of Minnesota, creating a new front door to the zoo with enhanced exhibit space is critical to the zoo's mission of giving residents and visitors to our great city a connection to Minnesota's great outdoors. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier.
Ms. Haberger, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to be here this morning and address the committee. Before I begin, I would first really like to say thank you to this committee for your quick action on the reviser bill, the technical fixes to the capital appropriation from last year that the zoo received some funds for our new Bear Country exhibit, which we will be beginning here this spring, and the very first major investment in our zoo since the 2012 flood. So I just wanted to say thank you. The Lake Superior Zoo is undergoing a significant transformation, the biggest one in decades, actually. Construction of new exhibits, increased efforts towards species survival programs, and a renewed effort in invigorating our educational programs to focus on sustainability, conservation, nature, and empathy. Our Treasured Regional Zoo is an AZA-accredited facility located in Duluth, Minnesota. We're one of three accredited facilities located in Minnesota and the only one in greater Minnesota. We've been in operation since 1923. We sit on approximately 20 acres, are home to over 300 animals, and in the midst of one of the most beautiful settings in northern Minnesota. The property is owned by the City of Duluth, but managed entirely by the Lake Superior Zoological Society, a nonprofit. One of the next steps in the zoo's programmatic development entails the replacement of our main building. Completed in 1929, this building is even older than many of our WPA-era structures and buildings on the grounds and has exceeded its useful life. It is literally falling apart around us. This building also houses more than 90 of our animals in exhibits. It serves as an educational space, a gathering space, but does house over 90 of the animals that we have. The prime objective of this replacement is to create a modern, environmentally friendly showcase space that will far better accommodate our planned and expanded educational programs, new and instructive indoor animal exhibits, flexible public gathering spaces, and a nature discovery center. The facility will also house our admissions, cafe, gift shop, and administrative space. Finally, the building will create an indoor connection linking the existing Primate Center and our Griggs Learning Center together, providing an exciting and often needed gathering space during inclement weather. The Lake Superior Zoological Society is seeking funding in the amount of $250,000 for the pre-plan design phase, design development, and final planning and budgeting for the project. And I am here to answer any questions that you might have. We would hope to begin the pre-design phase this year yet, in July 2019, and anticipate final completion of the design development plans by the end of next year. Questions? Are there any questions?
Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
House File 2291. Representative Bowe.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
I am pleased, and in fact, I'm proud to be here this morning to introduce House File 2291, seeking $4.3 million. I believe that the Lake Waconia Regional Park will be of not only regional but statewide significance. It is part of the Metropolitan Regional Park System, and it's located on the second largest lake in the metro area. Lake Waconia is a gem. It's a beautiful lake that is deep, cool, and clean, and is very popular with area residents. We're seeking matching funds today from the state of Minnesota because Carver County is a small park, or a small county, and this project is a big lift. And so it exceeds really the funding sources that we have to raise dollars to make a project like this. So I would like to introduce our testifier, Marty Walsh, who is the director for Parks and Recreation in Carver County.
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lake Waconia Regional Park is a 160-acre park located in the southwest metropolitan area. The requested investment will eliminate septic systems and wells from lakeshore property. The investment will provide needed restrooms and changing facilities to maintain public health at a swim area and beach, and for activities like picnicking, boating, and other recreational activities. I've provided a handout there for you also, which kind of breaks out, if you will, the costs, as well as there's some talking points. And located inside is a map of the area that is planned to be developed. There is also a pictorial, if you will, of some of the activities which are currently taking place in the park. The investment will also create shelters for enjoyment for families, businesses, and other social activities. It will create approximately 3 miles of trail traversing along lakeshore, wetland, and atop an 80-foot-tall scenic vista overlooking Lake Waconia and historic Coney Island of the West. It will create a playground for children to experience creative play, build strength and social interactive skills. It will provide fishing piers for all ages and various abilities to experience the thrill of a tug on a line or perhaps a meal to enjoy. The investment will provide lakeshore services to experience watercraft activities of paddleboarding, kayaking, and canoeing, and will facilitate motorized transport out to Coney Island of the West. It will provide additional lakeshore services of concessions and the experiences of having a cool drink and an ice cream cone on a warm day. It will connect the planned buildings to municipal, sanitary, and water services. The investment will provide a pleasant landscape to enjoy a day by the lake, walk along forested areas, and across rolling hills. This investment will facilitate events that are of regional and statewide significance. We host one of the largest, the largest vintage antique snowmobile show that we know of. It also has hosted other events such as the 2012 Governor's Fishing Opener, and will continue to support triathlons and walkathons. We are requesting your assistance. Lake Waconia Regional Park is of regional and statewide significance. It's a 3,000-acre lake in the metropolitan area and the second largest. 52% of our visitors reside from outside our county boundaries. We are a small county but rapidly growing. Carver County is proposing to match $4.3 million with state bonds of $4.3 million. We thank you for the opportunity this morning to visit, and if you'd have any questions, I'd stand for those.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Early in your presentation, you said that part of this money is going to be used for private homes to upgrade septic systems and private holding ponds?
No, Madam Chair, no. None of this dollars is not used for private. It is to connect our planned facilities, planned future facilities, restrooms, and picnic shelters to municipal services. So Lake Waconia Regional Park resides outside of the municipal service boundaries and is currently on septic and well systems.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification, because I heard that too.
Well, I'm sorry.
What did you mean when you said it was going? That's all park facilities, then?
Yeah, those facilities are park facilities.
Okay, thank you.
And how many buildings are in the park now?
Right now, there are two structures that are park related. They are old shelter, both of which are failing. They're quite old in terms of they were built in the 60s. There's an old restroom building that is on a septic containment system, and there's also a picnic shelter facility that, too, is old, and both of which have been structurally reviewed and are failing.
Okay. And is the responsibility of the park now with the county?
The Lake Waconia Regional Park is administered by Carver County, as a part of the regional park system, metropolitan regional park system. So we are an implementing agency of the regional park system.
Has this park received bonding funds in the past?
It has.
Could you supply us the amount?
I could get you that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your consideration.
I've got half a second or half a minute. In the metropolitan park system, then do you have to get permission to propose a bill like this, asking for $4.3 million that will be matched by the county?
Madam Chair, we are pursuing the funding outside of the regional park system's traditional allocation. The funding that we receive as a small county through the regional park system is not sufficient enough for us to undertake a project of development.
And so you want to have more activities, so you have to find the money to do that, and you're proposing that we go halfway with you.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. It shows initiative.
Thank you.
Second page. House file 2292, Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. This is a project, Otter Lake, Campbell Lake, are located just west of Hutchinson, actually, I believe it within the city limits. Representative Grunhagen and I share the city of Hutchinson, so he is a co-author with this, and this is a bill to make some restoration and to improve the water quality. And I have with me former Mayor Hutchinson, current Councilman, Mr. Young. Mr. Cook. Yes. Why is it? Steve Young was suddenly in my head. Steve Cook.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. As Representative Erdahl said, my name's Steve Cook. I'm on the City Council for Hutchinson, and I'm here today to explain a little bit more about the $4.5 million bonding request to help us restore habitat and recreation in the South Fork of the Crow River Basin, which also includes Otter and Campbell Lakes in Hutchinson. The lakes were created in the late 1800s when a flour mill was constructed along the river. And the river basin encompasses a combined 650 acres. The basin has historically provided a variety of recreational uses for the region, including boating, canoeing, fishing, and wildlife observation. However, over the years, this river has become impaired with high levels of total suspended solids or sedimentation. And the sedimentation and nutrient enrichment has led to shallow water, poor water quality, and vegetation growth that has really negatively impacted habitat and recreational opportunities. In fact, a large delta sediment has been growing where the river enters into the basin. It's important to explain what an amazing asset this river basin is. The size, which runs a little over 2 miles east and west and almost 4 miles north and south, which you can see on the back of the handout that was provided. It's an area that's home to numerous city parks, a city campground, ball fields, the McLeod County Veterans Memorial Park, a wildlife sanctuary, and the River Song Music Festival. It's also adjacent to State Wildlife Management Area. The Loose Line State Trail follows the river and parks through the city on its way east, where it connects to the Metro Trail System. And finally, the South Fork of the Crow is a state water trail. In short, this area is a haven for outdoor activity. But unfortunately, less and less of that activity is able to take place on and around the water. However, in the early 2000s, the city started efforts to improve this signature regional asset. And the first phase involved working with the DNR in 2007 to replace our aging Lowhead Dam with a more natural tiered rock riffle dam. This wasn't a major investment for the city, but it also created a natural fish ladder that allowed fish to go up and down into the river basin. And as a result, populations of smallmouth bass and walleye have increased markedly. The next phase has been improving, making stormwater improvements to limit sedimentation from the city sources into the river. Combined, the city has invested $1.9 million on three major stormwater pond projects in the last 10 years, and the current $700,000 project will benefit this lake basin specifically. 2 years ago, the city hired an engineering firm to do more detailed analysis on the river basin, and then last year we organized a technical advisory panel that included representatives on the groups listed at the bottom of the handout. But in short, it had the DNR, Soil and Water Conservation, district reps, U.S. Corps of Engineers, and the USDA, and members of the public. This group looked at possible next steps to develop a more comprehensive approach with the ultimate goals to improve water quality through sediment removal, improve fish and wildlife habitat, engage the public with learning opportunities and citizen science, and increase public access for fishing, boating, canoeing, and kayaking. So now we're at the point where we need to reduce the sedimentation that is coming into the river from outside of the city, and that's where the bonding request comes in. The money would specifically help us to clean up the public water body with stream restoration, shoreland restoration, and most importantly, the development of a forebay or a large pool, which would help capture the sediment before it enters into the river and the lakes. The forebay then can be cleaned periodically and in a controlled manner. When that's done, that'll allow us to move to phase three, which would begin the removal of the sediment without having to worry about sediment filling back in the lakes again. That in turn will allow the rest of the project and all the goals to get done. So, thanks.
Okay. Mr. Cook, then, are you telling me that phase one and two were paid for by the city?
Most of it, the DNR put in $475,000 for the dam replacement. The city put in about $900,000 for that. The stormwater ponds, that was all done with city money.
And was so another 1.9. What you're saying is you put in your money before, and so now you want money without match for the removal of the sediment.
Yes.
Because that's from outside.
Exactly. We've been making efforts to reduce the sedimentation from the city sources with city funds. And now, since this is from outside the city, we're looking for state funds to help us address some of those issues.
And you're asking for $4.5 million.
That's correct. And it's a phased project. The sedimentation removal will be another piece of the project that we'll probably be looking to share in some of that as well.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Lilly. Please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Members, thank you for hearing our bill this morning. I'm proud to say that I've never had so many offers for a bill that I've had. I had we filled out the 35 and actually started another bill and threw it in the hopper. So, Representative Juergens and Representative Bowe and are co-leading the effort with Representative Daphne and myself on this bill. And so it's essentially $10 million for the metropolitan area for parks and trails. Quite honestly, we're doing, we're extremely well used, our system, and we're extremely well loved. And if anything, not overloved. So we're with me. I have we have what is it? 10 different government, 10 agencies. And with me this morning, I have Mr. Carlson from the Three Rivers System. And I'm going to pass to him and let him kind of get into the details of where this money would go. And this has been done in the past cycles, and it's money that is really well used and then compounds into other investments. So it's, as a legislator, that always appeals to me because we get a very good bang for the dollar. So if a dollar goes in, we get many more dollars back. I have about half hour, that's right, Madam Chair? I'd like to pass to Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. My name is Bo Carlson. I'm the superintendent of Three Rivers Park District, and it's my pleasure to present the Metro Regional Bonding Package. Thank you to Representative Lilly for carrying this bill for us. House File 2163 is for capital improvements within the Metro Regional System. The regional system was created by the state of Minnesota in 1974 as part of the Metro Regional Parks Act, and it's, in essence, it was created in order to not duplicate the state park system in the metropolitan area. The whole concept behind it was we had these established systems, in some cases almost 100 years old, that we wanted to essentially act as state parks within the metropolitan area. With that, over the course of the last almost 40 years, we've provided those regional park services in the form of regional parks, regional trails, and park reserves within the system. These are natural resource-based parks. These aren't ball diamonds. These aren't picnic areas or ball fields. These are large tracts of land within the metro regional system. We have 56 regional parks in the system, and we have almost 60 million visitors. So it's a tremendous growth over the course of the last 40 years. Even in the last 5 years, we've seen significant growth. The only item within the state of Minnesota that compares as far as size is the Mall of America, which has about 40 million visits, so we're far surpassed that. 56,000 acres within the metro system total. That represents the entire metro regional park system and the 10 agencies, and 400 miles of regional trail. That's been a significant growth that we've had over the last few years. The agencies involved in the system are the 7 counties within the metro, and then we have 3 cities, City of Bloomington, City of Minneapolis, and St. Paul. Three Rivers Park District represents suburban Hennepin County within that system. You'll see in the presentation a combination of the growth of the acres of the system itself, the miles of trail that we've seen, and the annual visitation. This is really the key to the success of the system over the course of the last few years. And it speaks to, I think, the tremendous love that folks have for the system. But that system needs to continue to improve, not only with capital improvements, maintenance of our infrastructure, but then dealing with the fact that in many cases we're being loved to death. The bonding that's provided to the metro regional system is split amongst the 10 agencies by formula based on size, based on visitation, based on budgets. That formula is in the packet and provides kind of a background for what each agency would receive ultimately for capital improvements. And finally, Madam Chair, in the back of the packet we have a project list. These are all the projects that would be funded with the $10 million, split up by agency, by location, and by project specific. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to provide this information.
Chair Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Lilly. When I look at 58.3 million visits a year, I try to equate that to something that a lot of people might be able to grasp. Football games at U.S. Bank Stadium that I think we contribute around $350 million to, about 65,000. And if you multiply that out over 10 or 12, it expands, and if you consider all the other things, the highest number I can come in at for the new stadium is a little bit under $4 million. 4 million people visit that. So this is a factor of 10 more than participate that. But the ask isn't even close to what the ask was for U.S. Bank Stadium. So I think it's a good investment of taxpayers' money.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Jergens?
Very quickly, Representative Lilly mentioned this. Is there still matching available? Last year I know that there were matching dollars. So what would we actually get for $10 million?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jergens, by policy, the Metropolitan Council matches whatever the allocation is from the state of Minnesota. In addition to that, all of the agencies have local match included, as well as many of the projects have federal dollars, as well as philanthropic dollars that are brought to the table. I can speak for the Park District. Our project, we have almost $8 million of federal money that's going into the redesign of Coon Rapids Dam Regional Park up on the river up in Brooklyn Center.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next up, we got Representative Detmer, House File 311. Welcome, Representative Detmer. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair, you're really going through these bills fast, and that's good. And I've only had
fast enough, Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, St. Croix River area is a great place to have a family. I know my family grew up in the Scandia area. We live in Forest Lake, but we spend a lot of time at William O'Brien State Park. And there's a great trail system that comes along the St. Croix River. And I also taught for 34 years at Forest Lake High School. And I would take my outdoor education classes out to the park when our cycling unit, our orienteering unit, and our cross-country ski unit that we had. And, Mr. Chair, with me today we have the City Administrator, Neil Soltis, and he would like to talk about this project that we have for the Gateway Trail. Thank you.
Mr. Soltis, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Neil Soltis, City Administrator, City of Scandia. Mr. Chair and committee, the Gateway Trail, the portions of the Gateway Trail that would connect William O'Brien State Park to the center of Scandia, the entirety of it, except for one section, have been in place for over a decade, in some instances two decades. And in 2016, the DNR managed to acquire an easement on the remaining 0.8-acre easement that completed that connection. Currently, using 2014 bond funds, the city is entered into a cooperative agreement with the DNR on the pre-design and design for a portion of that trail from the center of Scandia to County Highway 52, at which point there would be an underpass. As a matter of fact, this week we just had a public hearing on the concept plan on an open house that was exceptionally well attended. So that project is midstream. But beyond a conceptual route, there has been no further look at how do we connect William O'Brien State Park to that segment of the trail that's under design. One of the issues here is that, as opposed to most typical trail projects, this does not follow an abandoned rail line. Due to the rolling terrain of the park, it creates a number of design challenges. As the crow flies, from the visitor center to the connection with the recently acquired easement is about 1.5 miles. However, in that 1.5 miles, you have 170 feet of elevation gain over rolling terrain, intermittent streams, and wetlands to deal with. What this bill does, it would provide for the appropriation of $500,000 of bond proceeds for the pre-design and design of that remaining Gateway Trail segment. One of the provisions of the bill is it must include suitable connections between the Gateway Trail extension and the existing facilities within William O'Brien State Park. There is a small portion in the bill that would provide funding for the city to work on pre-design and design of a connection from a proposed trailhead, which is on city property behind our former fire hall, to the Gamel Garden Museum. Gamel Garden Museum in Scandia. Scandia is the first Swedish settlement, and the Gamel Garden Museum does interpretation on the immigrant experience on and beyond the Swedish immigrants. They have programming that that allows people of all cultures to understand the immigrant story.
Thank you, Representative Demmer.
And just, I need to introduce our mayor of Scandia, Christine Majewski. She's right over here. She's just going to wave to you. But they're both here today because we have another bill coming up later on today. But thank you for hearing this bill.
Thank you. Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the minutes at this time. If
Representative Pearson, move approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Actually, we do have a correction staff have just mentioned. And so we need to add Representative Bennett in there, and so we will consider that. Let's have a
motion to reconsider the minutes then at this time.
Okay. Motion to reconsider the minutes with the now with the corrected minutes with Representative Peggy Bennett being excused on the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I come before you today with requests in House File 353 for $15 million cash for equipment for the systems of the public television stations across the state. Patty Messer is here to explain what they do and what the request consists of for.
Welcome, Ms. Messer. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Patty Messer. And good morning, Chairman and Madam Chair and all members of the committee. Although I'm here as the General Manager of WDSE-WRPT, I represent the Minnesota Public Television Association Group, and we thank you for your consideration this morning of this bill. And thank you to Representative Murphy for carrying the bill. Public television isn't just an industry or a service. It's a mission that's not yet accomplished. With each generation of children, we have a renewed purpose. And our purpose is to share information connecting community for the purpose of encouraging public discourse, civil discourse. And our emphasis is on education, particularly with children. The best argument for public media was made by Mr. Rogers 50 years ago in 1969. And I don't have the demeanor of Mr. Rogers. I don't have the experience of Mr. Rogers. And I certainly do not have his eloquence, but what I do share with him is his passion for public media. And that is what all Minnesota Public Television Association members do, is we have that passion. And we carry his legacy through our programming that speaks to children in a thoughtful, inclusive, and respectful way. We do that as individual stations, and we do that as a collective group. Public television is a value asset serving all of our communities. Besides being the largest classroom in the state, we are available to all Minnesota's children, including those who can't attend preschool, and we offer educational media that helps prepare children for success in school. As a group, we offer over 22,000 hours of children's wholesome educational programming. We're also about, at a time when funding for music and arts is cut within our schools, MPTA is helping to keep the arts alive today for generations to come by ensuring the world's music, theater, dance, and art remain available to Minnesotans, many of whom never have the opportunity to experience them otherwise. And again, as a collective group, we share about 30,000 hours of arts and cultural programming. And again, we are a trusted window to the world. The MPTA offers programming on a wide range to nearly 5 million, over 5 million people. It's not just within the borders of Minnesota. We are a valuable asset serving all of our communities. Besides being the largest classroom, this bill is about maintaining $104 million infrastructure that we have helped build over time. The equipment is necessary to operate facilities used to generate content and broadcast programs for over-the-air and online distribution. And our six stations serving our citizens are now facing a gigantic financial obstacle. because of the stations originally went on the air about the same time, our essential major equipment components have arrived at the end of their useful life at about the same time, and so some of the equipment is more than 40 years old and no longer supported by the original manufacturers. So we do not rely solely on state funding. So, for example, at my station, we have an annual budget of about $3 million, and each year we are investing approximately $150,000 to $200,000 in facility and equipment needs. So it's difficult to keep pace with those dollars over that amount. Declining state equipment grants in recent years and the elimination of a key federal program that was the major funder of these equipment grants, the NTIA, has greatly compounded the problem. This bill will not fund our total current equipment needs because they are in excess of $23 million. But they will provide the initial capital that will allow the stations to leverage the additional capital necessary to fully retrofit the broadcast system. The state of Minnesota has always been a stable base of economic support for public television. The state has always been a reliable financial partner, but not the only source, like I said, of revenue. You want me to stop? Because I can keep going.
Representative Consolari.
Thank you. Big supporter of public television allows me to expose my children and grandchildren to cultural programming, the arts that they would not necessarily have the opportunity to see without it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Murphy, for bringing this forward. Representative Considine, I agree. As Chair's legacy, too, you've been really good stewards of telling the legacy story around the state, so I thank you for that effort as well. And
thank you.
So hopefully this helps you tell the other stories as well, like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Murphy.
Thank you.
Representative Wolkman. Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Brand, House File 423. Welcome, Representative Brand. You may proceed.
Thank you. So this first bill is informational hearing only, right?
Yes.
So there's no need to move any bills or anything like that.
Yes.
Chair, right?
Okay. You're correct, Representative Brand.
Well, good morning. I just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Lee and members of the committee. Thank you for having giving me 5 minutes to talk about House File 423 today. The child care crisis is just that, a crisis, and it affects everybody everybody's district, I should say, across our state. It's not just a Minnesota issue. It's an issue across our country as well. But we have to look for new and different ways to tackle the situation. I've got a couple of bills this year that I'm working on diligently, and I've got a lot of support. Today I want to talk about House File 423. In your packets, you should have received a letter from the Alliance of the YWCAs. And so I am very proud to see that the Minnesota Alliance of YMCAs, rather, are supportive of this bill. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to turn this over to Scott McMahon from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities to address this. But I will premise by saying I'm a former board member of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and this particular program that we're working on, House File 423, is tailored somewhat after a project that we did in St. Peter. I'm a former city council member in St. Peter. And back in 2013, there was an issue. We had a lack of child care, and it was affecting myself and another city council member who both had infants at the time. And so one day we were talking about how tough it was to find daycare in St. Peter, and the city administrator happened to hear the conversation and asked us more questions. And from that evolved into a study, and that community study was a whole host of different partners across the spectrum, employers, the school district, the county, the city, everybody that really had a stake in that issue. And from that, the recommendations were made, two things: money to be set aside through EDA for capital investment, and money to be set aside for certification and training for new providers. And so this is the capital investment piece. And so with that, I will turn it over to Scott.
Welcome, Mr. McMahon. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Sure. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 423.
The bill, as you have, or as you don't have in front of you right now, is a general fund appropriation bill. We are having it heard in this committee because there's the possibility that this could be turned into a bonding supported bill. So we wanted to have the chance to let you know what this bill is all about. As Representative Brand indicated, House File 423 would provide $10 million in state funding to be matched by at least $10 million in local and private funding to address the child care crisis in greater Minnesota. As you are aware, Minnesota is facing a child care crisis, which is having a major impact on families across Minnesota. But in greater Minnesota, the crisis has moved beyond impacting our families. It is now impacting the economic health and stability of our communities. In the past 2 years, child care has rocketed up to be the number one issue negatively impacting economic development in our communities. According to the Center for Rural Policy, between 2006 and 2015, we lost 15,000 child care slots in greater Minnesota, and now have a shortage of more than 35,000 slots. Because of the child care deficit, we now have businesses deciding whether to locate or expand in our communities based on whether child care is available in our community. We have employees turning down job offers when they discover there is no child care available in the community they are looking at moving into. And we have families and employees leaving our communities because there is no child care. We know one of the biggest barriers to starting new child care businesses in greater Minnesota is accessing the capital necessary to do so. We have countless stories from providers in our communities who are looking at building a new child care center but can't develop a business model that supports operating the business and servicing the debt. We have stories of cities that are forced to step up and build child care centers with resources they don't have because nobody else can and the communities frankly need them. We have stories of manufacturers who are putting child care centers in their facilities because they need them in order to retain their workforce. House File 423 will provide $20 million in accessible capital, $10 million from the state, and at least $10 million in the private sector to address the infrastructure needed to grow 35,000 child care slots in greater Minnesota. It will give cities access to the capital they need to build child care centers in their communities like we are seeing in Little Falls, repurpose portions of underutilized school buildings as we are seeing in Winnebago, and adding child care onto community centers like we see in Grand Rapids. It will allow cities to repurpose vacant buildings into child care pods where several family care licensed providers can operate in a common facility. Thanks to the great work done by the Northland Foundation, we know that in the Northwest region studied, the cost of new child care center slots is between $2,000 and $5,000 per slot. This funding, which will bring with it an equal amount of private funding, will help us build out up to at least a third of the missing child care slots in our communities. Thank you.
Chair Considine.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to say that Representative Brand and myself met numerous times in the interim with child care providers, the Southern Minnesota Initiative, Region 9 Development Commission, and this bill is came out of some of those meetings. Thank you for taking the lead on this, Representative Brand.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Brand. I think this is a very good bill, which I'll support. We have a great problem, as you've outlined, in greater Minnesota with our workforce, and two of the top things, affordable housing and daycare. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get people to come and work in greater Minnesota if they don't have a place to live and they have no one to take care of their children. Mm-hmm. And so there are various reasons why we are in this predicament. I think one, we've been losing too many daycare centers because of maybe economics, maybe regulations or whatever. But whatever we can do to remedy this is a good thing, and I think you're trying to do that in this bill.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I see that we have built in some extra time that we should allot. Now, if we have further questions of Mr. McMahon, and the DE1 is the style that you prefer, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. McMahon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, so the DE1 was a bill that we had that we're working on last biennium. We weren't anticipating this bill to be pulled over to this committee at this time, and so we wanted to get into your package just to give you a sense as to what the framework of turning House File 423 into a bonding bill could look like. Mm-hmm. Our expectation is that if your desire is to roll this idea into the bonding bill, that this would be a framework we could look at. It's probably not precisely the right kind of language for it, but it gives you a sense as to what we're looking for. We do know from the city standpoint, it works better for this proposal to be general fund dollars because it allows the providers direct access to it. But we do know within the center structure, we have the ability for the cities to partner with the state, to partner, frankly, with the local school districts to figure out this problem. So we don't intend at this point for the Delete All Amendment to become the bill, but it should give you a sense as to how this thing could work.
Okay. And Mr. McMahon, as you've been discussing with so very, very many people and Representative Brand, to get a settlement on this issue of some kind that will encourage people to stay in the business or at least consider, is there any advantage now for a family type of home care for the children in their homes rather than, or do they have to think about becoming a center?
Mr. McMahon or Representative Brand?
Well, I think House File 423 is more of a capital improvement for centers. And in fact, we've had conversations in which people across our state are looking to get out of the home and into a center, and this would provide that that fluidity or that access that they don't otherwise have in places in greater Minnesota where they want to expand. And so this would directly benefit them. I have another bill, House File 422, which would help new in-home daycare providers. In fact, it was just highlighted today in the op-ed in the Star Tribune, so I appreciate that highlight as well. But House File 422 would create certification resources and also training resources for getting daycare ready in the home.
And how are you addressing the workers for these centers and these workers for in the home?
Representative Brian.
What I would say is that, with House File 422, there's it's the component where the money would be administered through the MIFs across the state. And the MIFs work with a variety of partners. They work with First Child Finance. They work with a structured way of creating a business model, creating a way to which they have advice for how to pay their employees, how to structure an employment situation for their center, and that's or their in-home service as well. And so it is nice to have partners who want to work with other partners in the interest of making sure that they are successful in their endeavors.
Thank you.
Representative Salt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I apologize to everybody for what I'm about to say. This is a capital investment committee. I find it difficult for my brain to do the gymnastics, and this goes to the fact that you sort of alluded to this, that there may be and probably is a different bill and a better place for funding to come to this critical community problem. We have huge dependence on solving this problem for the state of Minnesota, for its economic development, for its social development, and for raising decent kids. These things are incredibly important, yet we run around trying to find the next pot of gold, which is essentially the activity that we're forcing all of these people to do that are requesting solutions. They should be able to go to the legislature and say, build some revenue, we need it now, fix it, develop a grant program and a funding program that would allow all the communities to do that, which is about 75% of your idea is fund local community ideas. But to do it from capital investment, which is primarily for a long history, and my history, of course, reaches back 3 years, so, it's a short forever from my perspective, but we should be using capital investment for capital purposes, not for trying to solve great social problems with this kind of thing. So I'm speaking that they have a great idea. They have identified, again, one that is commonly held by all of us to create a solution for a huge social problem that we have right now. But why in the world do we all think we want to be that bucket of cash? It's like a dad who's run out of money and is just trying to filter through all of the savings accounts to see if he can gather together a few more bucks to buy that car that everybody wants. This is, I just had to say that. It weighs on my mind. Chair Murphy knows that I've been troubled by this. So, again, I apologize for taking the 2 minutes that I just wasted.
Not a waste.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just playing off of what Representative Murphy said. I know that the Center for Rural Policy and Development just did a study on child care centers. And it's just interesting because the trends apparently are just the opposite in rural communities than they are in the metro communities. And for some reason, there's been a sharp decrease in family daycare centers. And that's concerning to me, and I'm not close enough to the situation to know why. But can you speak to that at all? Because I, too, am concerned about obligating resources to build large centers. Mm-hmm. If there's something we can do to encourage at home, in the home setting, daycare, like we were all used to when my kids were really young, you know, I had them in a home setting, and I really liked that opportunity. So I'm concerned about that. Can you speak to that at all?
Representative Brand?
Yes, I can a little bit, although I think that, as you alluded to, the Center for Rural Policy and Development, I would refer you to their letters to the new governor. In the last chapter, I think it's on page 96 or 94, somewhere on there, is addressing child care. And it talks about how, you know, providers themselves, in-home providers, have left the market for a variety of reasons. If you talk to Children's First Finance, when they do their exit interviews, it's a financial issue. When you talk to other folks, it's other issues. And I think that there is no silver bullet for the child care issue. But what this does is it addresses at least some of the issue. What the Center for Rural Policy and Development is documented is the fact that although there have been in-home daycares leaving the market, either in the Twin Cities and greater Minnesota, they've been backfilled in the urban areas by centers faster than in the rural areas where I come from. And so as a result, that void is still there and growing. And so there's a lot of challenges with daycare right now. There's a lot of challenges with that. What I will say is that I hope that this provides an opportunity for communities, especially communities that don't have a lot of opportunity for capital, in which we know, again, that there are some folks that are looking for these opportunities, that this will actually benefit communities. Because Jack and I share Mankato together. We represent Mankato together. There alone is 863 slots that are left vacant. And we are at a point where we could use more workers, but we're not getting more workers in part because there's just no job care opportunities. And so it's a constant struggle. And I imagine there would be more people willing to go back into the market and find a job and work at a good paying job if they had child care available. So this is an economic development issue also. It's just stifling our economy.
Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add one thing to the conversation, understanding that child care is an issue and doesn't seem to want to go away. My daughter ran a child care center for about 17 years. But I think this almost comes down to a community-by-community issue. And I, as an example, I point to a town in my district, Battle Lake, who felt the same as any other community where they were not able to get employees because there was no child care, or some were traveling great distances to find a care, just to get to work. It was very difficult. So through an effort by the community, they raised the money to build a brand new center that just opened this past fall. It's amazing what was done to build this facility. But hard work, raising a lot of money, grants, whatever it took, but they raised all the money to build it brand new, and then it's leased to somebody that'll do the actual management of that facility. So it's a good solution to that problem, and it deals in the region. And I just hold that out as an example, because if you want to get it done, you find the right people to run the. Somebody has to be in charge, and that community found some people really, really good at doing that, and so. it's what you're doing here is excellent and needed, but I'm saying that communities have some solutions of their own if they really want to solve the problem. It takes money and hard work. But it, again, they're so proud of their facility. I'd invite anybody to either look it up on the internet or drive through. It's on Highway 210, just east of Fergus Falls, and it's very nice.
Thank you, Representative Brand. We have ran out of time for this conversation, and hope that members will reach out to you offline on this conversation. And we have up next House File 2040. Representative Brown, you may proceed.
Yes, thank you. Last one for today, House File 2040, is a bill to increase the amount of beds for available MSOP program. So I'm proud and very supportive of the fact that I'm from St. Peter, and in St. Peter we have the Regional Treatment Center. And we have two programs within the Regional Treatment Center, the MSOP program and the forensics or the MID program. This is for the MSOP program. If folks have been around here a little bit, know that there are a couple of lawsuits floating around, and there's been some discussions and some issues about how we transition people out of the MSOP program, the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, back into communities. And there's been some conversations and some lawsuits about this. And what this Phase 2 bonding bill essentially does is creates more beds and more opportunities for folks to start transitioning out of those programs and back into communities. And so today I've got with me Dave Greenman from the Department of Human Services, and he'd like to talk a little bit more about this particular ask. But basically what it is, it's for $18.2 million, just shy of $18.3 million, to finish off a wing, or actually a couple of wings, that are kind of right now just down to the studs. They were formerly used and deemed to be kind of unsuitable for habitation, so they were ripped down to the studs, and so this would actually remodel those into facilities that could be used, kitchens, bedrooms, showers, bathrooms, that sort of thing, so that way folks can work on their process of transitioning back into communities. So with that, I would like to pass it over to Mr. Greenman.
Madam Chair. Welcome, Mr. Greenman. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Dave Greenman. I'm the Budget Director at the Department of Human Services. Thanks for the opportunity to come in today and talk about this proposal. As many of you know, the clients in the sex offender program are ordered to be there by the courts to receive sex offender treatment. And as these clients progress through their different phases of treatment, the court may order them to transfer the client to be from the secure facilities at Moose Lake and St. Peter to somewhat less restrictive environments on the St. Peter campus, where the clients, which is known as community preparation services, where clients learn the skills that to live and work in the community. Currently, with the community preparation services, we have about 89 beds. We don't have it's actually 89 beds. And we've been filled to capacity since 2016. We've got 37 people who have been court ordered to be moved to the community preparation services program. And those 37 clients are on the waiting list and have not been able to move yet because we don't have space for them in the program. So as Representative Brand said, we are requesting $18.3 million. This would be used for phase two of a multi-phase project on the St. Peter campus to design, remodel, and construct and furnish existing buildings on the lower campus of the St. Peter Regional Treatment Center to make them usable for the CPS program. What this proposal would do is add about 50 additional beds for the Community Preparation Services program. It would provide badly needed space for client recreational activities and also for staff facilities, and would also develop a clinical, medical, and other support functions on the campus. In total, this would remodel a total of about 63,000 square feet on the campus, would not add any additional space, but would basically require a lot of replacement or and or upgrading of the existing buildings, as Representative Brand mentioned. They're down to the studs. So this would be HVAC systems, plumbing, electrical, security, and life safety, and also building envelopes, replacement of doors and windows in the facilities. And there are three existing buildings that we'd be working on. The Green Acres building is on the campus. Sunrise Building, and then also the Tomlinson Building. These all three of these buildings were built in the 1960s and are in need of renovation to get them up to standards so that we can work on the, we can put the folks into the, to the CPS program. We did receive funding for phase one of the project on the St. Peter campus in 2014. We received about $7.4 million for that, which we really appreciate. On, as part of the funding for that, what we were able to do is use the balance of the funds from that 2000. The legislature gave us the authority to use the balance of the funds from the 2014 funding to proceed in developing and designing the documents outlined for the Green Acres and the Sunrise and Tomlinson building renovations. And so this is a shovel-ready project that's ready to go. An added benefit of this project is that we have one of the big challenges the department has is deferred maintenance with a lot of our buildings and our campuses with our DCT programs. And what this will do is eliminate the need for about $9.7 million in deferred maintenance of buildings on our campuses. Some of the issues that we have to face, the department has to face with regard to with the current trajectory of clients that are moving through their treatment, is that we don't have the space on the campus. As I mentioned, we don't have space on the campus for these folks. If the court finds that the commissioner's not making a good faith effort to move these folks in from where they are now in the in the program to the community preparation services, it's possible we'll be found in contempt of court. We have we have about three federal lawsuits currently being filed, and so we'd like to get these folks moved along into the final stages of their treatment, and we think this will be a good project to do that.
Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Greenman, so your ask is 18.298 or 285 or in there.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you say about the deferred? If we go with the 18 million plus and we do the three buildings, then we won't have how much dollars for deferred maintenance? We'll save that. We won't have to maintain the buildings any longer because we fixed them up.
Madam Chair, I believe that's correct. We have $9.7 million in deferred maintenance needs on those buildings that will be taken care of if we invest this money in upgrading the three buildings I'm talking about.
Well, not exactly. But I wanted the clarification on that.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Brand.
Yeah, thank you very much for hearing this bill. I think it's just a necessary part. I mean, we're hearing from folks from DHS today that are specifically saying that if we don't address this situation, we're going to have ramifications from the courts, and I would much prefer us to take care of the situation this year. So thank you very much for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Brand. Having no further business before us, our next meeting is Tuesday, March 27th. Meeting is adjourned.